Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
It's Howard Simon and Jeremy White.
There's two things your stupid show talks about. One,
Howard Simon.
One,
Jeremy White.
Both suck.
On WGR Sports Radio 550.
We'll get you some headlines. Sabres lose in a shootout. A 2-1 final. Tampa takes the win. Only goal scored by Rasmus Dahlin. It was a entertaining game. Overtime was exciting. Buffalo only scores once. Tampa scores once with Kucherov and then scores in the shootout with Stamkos and Kucherov. They are 6 points out of a playoff spot with one game in hand and running out of time. The odds not looking great, but still alive and home tomorrow against the Washington Capitals. Who made a trade? Carl Hagelin joins Washington. Third and a conditional sixth for Hagelin. There's a report, Bob McKenzie, saying that the Sabres were in on Hagelin. So they weren't willing to pay the price. They don't have exactly the full boat of picks. They have three firsts, and the middle is missing a little bit, and the middle tends to be what is traded in deals. So there's that. Sabres lose. Out-of-town scoreboard was not necessarily kind. Carolina is in that final playoff spot as of now, and Columbus has fallen out. We have on our Wester hotline Ryan Kennedy of the Hockey News. We'll talk about Columbus a little bit. We'll talk about the Sabres. Ryan, good morning. Jeremy White, Sal Capaccio, how are you?
Doing great. Thanks for having me.
So where do we start? We start with, Columbus is like the most interesting team for the deadline, and the fact they've fallen out of the top eight is, I think, maybe adding interest to that. But let's start with the Sabres as you look at the season, because it's been a, I want to say it's been a battle around here. The team is not that far off of what preseason expectations would have been. But it is very far off where mid-season expectations would have been. And I don't mean that anyone thought they were going to finish in first, because very, very few people thought that that 10-game win streak was a sign of who they are. But at that point, being average was really the only goal, and they've kind of fallen off the face of the earth in respect to that. So when you look at the Sabres short-term and long-term, what are you looking at?
Well, I think it's still a positive outlook, and I think this is about where we thought, and you're right, you know, expectations get heightened when you go on a streak like that. But I mean, the importance of this season was getting guys like Dahlin and Mittelstadt into the fold. It was the entire team still getting used to Phil Housley's structure, his systems, and I think there's been a lot of improvement there. I think it's more of a cohesive team, even if it doesn't seem like it all the time. And, you know, for me, I think, you know, Jeff Skinner is kind of the key right now. It's really not about team success the rest of the year. It's, you know, can they retain Jeff Skinner? You know, can they sign him to a long-term deal? I feel like that's probably the best-case scenario for the Sabres. And in terms of the rest of the year, play the kids, let the chips fall where they may, and know that next season you're going to be even stronger, and you should expect to compete for a playoff spot in 2019-20.
On Skinner, you know, as this season has played out, Ryan, the thing I wanted the Sabres to just keep winning and keep having fun, and Skinner to keep scoring goals, just make him want to be here. And, you know, the lull the last 3 months has kind of given that a hit. And my opinion is that the pressure to sign Skinner has really gone up for Jason Botterill. And Skinner's agent and Skinner, they've got to know that. Like, right about now, it feels like Botterill needs this to happen.
Yeah, I mean, this is going to be a big thing, because you make a trade like that, and, you know, you want to have that guy for more than just a season. And, I mean, the ace in the hole for the Sabres, I think, is the young centers that they have. I mean, if you're going to Jeff Skinner's camp, you can say, like, look, we got a promising team here. You know, Jeff is still in his prime years. Jack Eichel, you know, Casey Middlestadt's going to get even better as time goes on. We've got guys that can play with Jeff, and we think we can put something nice together here. and he can be a big part of that. I think that's the pitch. And obviously, you know, you're going to have to pay up as well. It's not going to be cheap.
Yeah. How about other teams that you're watching right now? We're talking trade deadline. Our trade deadline coverage is presented by the Ideal U Weight Loss Center. Call 631-THIN for the Ideal U Weight Loss Center. Clarence, West Seneca, Tonawanda, and brought to you by Holiday and Leisure Rinks, your hockey headquarters since 1972. Sign up now for Dippin' Dots Spring Hockey League. On Columbus, they're out of the top eight. What is Columbus, what is Jarmo Kekäläinen thinking? They're kind of in a, I don't know, they're in the jackpot, right? You got to figure out what you're going to do here. You're going to try and make the playoffs. They've never won a round of the playoffs, and they could probably fetch a decent price for at least for Artemi Panarin. So what's Columbus's latest?
I mean, for me, if I'm Jarmo, I'm dealing those big chips. You know, it's just not looking like their year, and with Panarin and Bobrovsky, you can get a mint. Even though they're pending UFAs, I mean, Panarin is a game changer. Guys like that don't come up at the deadline that often. And, you know, I was talking to some colleagues the other day. It's amazing to think about the talent available at this deadline when you include some of the Ottawa guys like Matthew Shane. You know, like, we're barely talking about Wayne Simmonds. And in other years, Wayne Simmonds would have been one of the top guys at the deadline. But now he's, like, way down the pecking order because there's so much more available, or at least potentially available. Columbus, I think if they look at the standings, they have to say, we are not in a good position right now. We're really fighting it. Panarin can get us a first, a roster player, and a good prospect. Bobrovsky can get us a first, a good prospect, maybe a roster player as well, or at least, you know, another goalie in exchange. I think you just have to do it. It's going to be painful, but I think Blue Jackets fans will understand. They're a pretty savvy group, even though it's not that old a franchise. And, you know, you build, and this was supposed to be a year for them to really contend. It didn't work out that way. I think Bobrovsky's been distracted the whole time, and that really hasn't helped matters. But I think they got to rip off that Band-Aid, because they're going to lose both of them in the summer. I mean, I'm positive about that. So you might as well get returns, because – You're not the favorite in your division. You're not even in a playoff spot in your division. Like, why keep up the charade at this point?
Ryan, on the Sabres, you know, we live in our bubble here and we're so focused on them and the reaction to the 10-game winning streak, where they were top of the league at that point, and then to suddenly just basically fall off a cliff and be where they are now, people are generally very upset about that situation. But from a national perspective, where are the Sabres right now, especially in relation to, you know, for you, what they were earlier in the year and what you expected them to be?
Well, I think it all kind of evens out. And I think from an outsider perspective, the Sabres are, they're kind of a fun little puppy right now, where when they do well, it's like, oh, that's great. It's great to see these kids having fun and they're getting some wins. You know, the franchise has had some tough times of late, but I don't think anybody was really scared of the Sabres. Like, no one was thinking, like, oh, Tampa needs to watch out in the first round or anything like that, because they are still growing as a group. And like I said earlier, they have some high-end talent, and, you know, they've got some game-breakers, but the roster still needs to get some cohesion. They still need to get a little deeper. You know, they've had a couple of guys that I think we thought might have been making bigger contributions at this time that haven't panned out yet. Talking about, you know, Nylander, Goulet, guys like that. So they're still shopping. They're still working. But I think there's a nice foundation there, and it's just a matter of being patient because, you know, Tampa's the best team in the league. You know, Toronto's lost, I think, 4 of 6, but they're still super dangerous. Boston's still super dangerous. Montreal's better than we expected. You know, I think Claude Julien has done a fantastic job there. So the Sabres, they kind of need to wait in line right now, and I know that's not fun to hear, but right now it's just about laying that foundation, getting those fundamentals set, and knowing that you do have talent that is still bubbling up.
My concern about this, Ryan, you know, I don't expect the Sabres to be, finger quotes, buyers at the deadline, but I'd like them to be builders. And what I mean by that is, you know, you're talking about getting in line. Toronto has added Jake Muzzin. He'll be on their team next year too. And Boston's added Charlie Coyle. He'll be on that team next year. So I already have Toronto and Boston, who are already better than me, already strengthening for next year as well. And if the Sabres can make any sort of deal at the deadline that is a building trade, they have the first-round picks. Often this is reserved for that's more of a summer deal. But, you know, whether it's Alex Wenberg, who they might be interested in, or Winnipeg's talking about making some moves, if I can find a young guy that I can get over here that's got some term, I'm interested in that. I don't care what day of the year it is.
Yeah, and I think that maybe that is, unfortunately, better for the draft in the summer, because then you're dealing with 30 more teams as opposed to, you know, 10, 12 teams right now that are going to make those trades with you. It almost feels like the draft is the new real trade deadline, because everybody's in one place, everybody's got the picks, and you can just do a lot more there. You're not constrained by buyers and sellers per se. You know, Venberg's pretty interesting because he's had a really down year, but, you know, I mean, we've seen the talent before. I think he can be a pretty good number two center. And, I mean, the way the NHL is going, you know, you can have him as a quote-unquote third-line center, but that's no longer necessarily your shutdown guy. It's just another good offensive player. So for the Sabres, I think Skinner's the big priority, because if they can retain him, obviously you've got a top-line winger that you know can fill the net. And those first-round picks, I mean, you make a good point. Like, those are great assets. And maybe one of them turns into a veteran player in the summer, but I think it's more likely that trade happens late June.
Ryan Kennedy, the Hockey News, joining us on the Wester Hotline. Before we let you go, you know, looking at the rentals that are out there, one thing about rentals, soon they become UFAs. And I'm thinking about Mark Stone, Matt Duchene, Wayne Simmons, Ryan DeZingle. When you look at the overall list of upcoming free agents, with Derek Brassard or Cody Ceci, for the Sabres, they're going to have room to spend. The question is, like, what is Duchene's number? What is Mark Stone's number? And Skinner's, you know, he'll hit the market too. So for a team with room, you know, Skinner maybe 9, Duchene, does he come in under that? I mean, age is a big factor here. These guys get to be about 26, 27, 28, and you get right on that edge of getting nervous about how much you want to pay and for how long.
Oh, certainly. And I think right now you can maybe, I don't know if you can take Stone off the table, but I feel like he's the most likely to re-sign of that group. And he, I mean, I don't know, he's so good 200 feet. I mean, he's just such a good two-way player that I don't know if he could maybe get 10 from Ottawa. But, you know, I think you're pretty much on the mark with the other numbers. I think Duchene, maybe at this point, he's like a 7.5, maybe an $8 billion guy. You know, talking around the office, we're saying somebody's going to overpay for DeZingle. You know, I don't know who it is and how much they do, but I think you have to be really careful with a player like that. I'm not really sure how much of an offensive upside he has long term, so it'll be very interesting to see what happens there. I think Simmons, he's had a really rough year. Even though he has that great specific set of skills, you know, he's like a Tom Wilson deterrent. He's a great net front presence. I still think he can contribute on a power play. I think just, you know, in Philly with JVR there, that kind of, you get a little bit of a redundancy there. But it'll be interesting to see what Simmons can fetch, because I mean, he's got a lot of miles on that body. And, again, I think that's a player you have to be careful with. I think at this point in his career, you know, maybe a two-year deal is all you really want to do. Obviously, he's going to want more. But it's going to be a pretty hectic free agent market if those guys don't re-sign, if and when they're traded.
Ryan Kennedy, the Hockey News. One final question. I'm going to ask everybody this question. Is it the year of the offer sheet?
Ooh, you know what? That'd be fun, but I don't think so.
Don't think so.
Yeah, teams are just too conservative, and they don't want to raise the ire of their GM buddy.
You're crushing Jeremy's dreams here, Ryan. He has been on the offer sheet thing for years and years.
I'm calling it the offer sheet wars begin this summer.
That is his crusade. If there's one thing here.
Well, I'll tell you one of the reasons, Ryan. The reason I think that is because as we talk about these guys like Stone and Duchene, and you say, somebody's going to overpay, free agency is overpaying as it is, And more often than not, the age of the guys that hit unrestricted free agency that are really good, they're always 28. And if you want one of those guys when he's 23 or 24, there's only one way to get him. You got to have him on your team, or you got to go poach him from somebody. So the offer sheet wars begin this summer. I'm prepared to be disappointed.
All right. It'll be fun.
Yeah, exactly. All right. Thanks, Ryan.
Thank you.
Ryan Kennedy, the Hockey News. The offer sheet wars. Imagine what it'll be like. Oh, it'd be so beautiful. If July 1st rolls around, like, the Devils have signed player X to an offer sheet. Wow, can you believe that? Let's talk about the, wait a minute, what's this? The Blues have signed so-and-so. And you just have like 10 offer sheets signed. It would be amazing. It'd be the best day of the NHL year.
I tweeted something the other day about the Bills should offer sheet George Fant.
Who's that? What's he do?
He is a tackle for the Seattle Seahawks. He also plays a little bit of tight end.
Okay.
Mostly in heavy sets, but he did catch a pass.
I remember this guy now.
And they had a very good offensive line last year as far as rushing. They were the number one rushing team in the league. They went from having a horrible line to a pretty good one, serviceable one, for what they're doing in Seattle. I'm not going to put them up there among the top offensive lines in the league, but they did a nice job. He is an RFA. And I said, this is a guy that the Bills should go out and try an offer sheet. He's an athlete. He can play tight end. He can even, he plays tackle. He can play tight end in a pinch if you need him to. Heavy sets, whatever. And someone said, offer sheet alert, and tagged you. And I said, yeah, I thought about you when I wrote this, because here's the thing. No one cares about offer sheets in the NFL. They happen.
They don't happen. They don't care.
They happen.
They happen in the NBA.
Yeah, like, what's the big deal?
In the NBA, there's not even any compensation.
Yeah.
You just signed the guy.
And here's the thing. Like, I'm looking at George Fant, and I'm thinking, the Seahawks aren't going to give him. In the NFL, the way it works is you either give him a first-round tender, which costs a lot of money,
mm-hmm.
second-round tender, which is a little less money, or an original round tender. And whatever that means is you pay, obviously, a higher salary for first or second and then original, but that's your compensation. If the guy's an undrafted free agent, you basically get no compensation. And he was an undrafted free agent.
Yeah.
So, okay, they give him a, if they give him an original round tender, which is going to cost maybe $2 million, somewhere in there. I have to look at the numbers again.
You sign him to more.
You sign him. You sign him to an offer sheet.
Yeah. And this is where...
You don't give up anything.
The Bills got in this with Hogan and Gillisley, right?
Yes.
They lost both of them to offer sheets.
And they retained Ryan Groy, who had an offer sheet on him.
Happens all day, every day.
Yes, all the time.
I'm actually considering starting a fantasy football league. I've been talking about it with Mike Shope, that I just want to have a league where we can offer sheet each other's players. I'm working on like the framework of it, and I'll just call up 10 friends, 11 friends, and say, let's do it. It's a fantasy football league where all you do is, what's different about it? Nothing, except we're going to have restricted free agent offer sheets.
Right.
Guess the prospect? Are we ready? I'm excited for it. I've been waiting for it. You've been waiting for it. Let's guess about a prospect.
We doing wide receivers still?
We're going to change it up a little bit.
Ooh.
Oh.
Wow. Jeremy, as you know, we've talked about it a little bit just to see if we can spice things up a little bit.
You're mixing positions on us.
I am. We're going to start doing that. So I'll give you some clues. Eventually in the clues, I think that you will eventually get what position it is.
Oh, all right.
I won't give you the right away.
Okay.
It will be incorporated, though, that at one point I will
actually
say what position it
this
is.
This could be fun because you say, like, I was a real road grader. I'm like, okay, so it's not a receiver.
Right.
All right. Anyway.
All right. So here we go. Here's your first clue for you guys. Growing up in Oklahoma, I was a two-star recruit out of high school, recruited by schools like Kansas, Kansas State, Wyoming, Tulsa, Arizona, and Baylor. I ended up choosing to play in the Big 12, and in 3 years at school, I registered 162 tackles and 13 interceptions. As a senior, you could call me a ball hawk, as I picked off 5 passes, returning 2 of them for touchdowns, and accumulated 66 tackles. That season helped me earn the honor as a unanimous All-American as a cornerback. Our team also made...
We think he's a cornerback?
Yes.
Our team...
I was going to say that... Actually, you could have left that out. 13 interceptions. It could have been a linebacker
right.
over the course of a career.
I was thinking safety. Then I went to linebacker when he said tackles,
okay.
And now you got me to corner.
But corner. I'm good
Thank
on
you.
That.
Our team also made it to the Orange Bowl that season, where I returned an interception for a touchdown thrown by a former Bills quarterback. I was also named the MVP of that game. And then I decided to forego my senior season and enter the NFL draft.
Orange Bowl, former Bills quarterback. That's Trent Edwards?
Stanford Orange Bowl could be. I mean,
I think they played in the Orange Bowl.
Yeah, they probably did, but that's a while ago, man. Like, that was before BCS era.
So why would they play? That's what we're saying. He picked off a former Bills quarterback in the Orange Bowl. Trent Edwards
would have been. Well, he wouldn't have been before BCS. I'm sorry. BCS started in 97.
EJ Manuel Orange Bowl. How about that?
Yes.
So EJ Manuel in the Orange Bowl played against the Big 12 team and threw a pick six against this guy.
Okay.
And did you say anything about draft position yet?
Not yet, no.
Okay.
Big 12 corner. Boy. Where would be? Okay. They weren't good enough to be in this spot, but the guy that comes to mind here is Aqib Talib from Kansas. I don't think he was good enough. They don't think the team was good enough for me to really put them here, but I'm going to go with him.
Wow. That's good. That's well done.
You're barred from Guess the Prospect.
That's a job well done.
Thank you.
Aqib Talib. Where was he drafted? First round?
Yeah, 20th. Tampa Bay.
20th overall by
Tampa
Bay.
He had
a
lot of issues coming out of college, like off-field issues.
They continued to
I just didn't think
NFL.
Kansas had made...
They made an Orange Bowl.
Can you guess which quarterback it was that he picked off?
I'd say EJ, right? Bill.
It wasn't EJ.
No.
Okay, that's changed things.
So this would have been 05, 06.
It doesn't, by the way. No. It could be like Matt Lyon. Right, it doesn't have to be one of their quarterbacks who was here for a long time. It could have been Tyrod Taylor.
Ooh, yeah.
I mean, he never threw picks.
But Tyrod would have been after. Like, Talib.
It was Tyrod Taylor.
Okay.
It was. Tyrod Taylor. Yep. When did Talib come into the league?
Let's see. He was drafted
maybe?
In 2008,
Eight.
I think.
Okay,
yeah.
2008. All right, that's Tyrod, yeah. Tyrod, early Tyrod, Virginia Tech. All right.
Very good.
It's the second time I got it on the first one.
That's a good one.
Now I'm going to come back with vengeance.
Jeez, I know you
are. No, don't venge. He's not even...
Not on you. Next time,
he's not even here
on.
Next week.
That's right.
All right. 803-0550, 1-888-550-2550 if you'd like to join us. You can still pick up tickets to the roast, by the way, if you want to. Monday, the deadline is at noon on Monday. Hey, enjoy eating the way the Italians intended. Until you're full. At Como Restaurant. $30 for just 15. You get a $30 gift certificate for just $15. That's 50% off all your Italian favorites. It's the deal of the day from My Buffalo Perks. Details at mybuffaloperks.com. That's the deal of the day from Como Restaurant. $30 for just 15. Details at mybuffaloperks.com.
About where we thought, and you're right, expectations get heightened when you go on a streak like that, but I mean, the importance of this season was getting guys like Dali and Mittelstadt into the fold. It was the entire team still getting used to Phil Housley's structure, his systems, and I think there's been a lot of improvement there. I think it's more of a cohesive team, even if it doesn't seem like it all the time. And, for me, I think Jeff Skinner is kind of the key right now. It's really not about team success the rest of the year. It's, can they retain Jeff Skinner? Can they sign him to a long-term deal? I feel like that's probably the best-case scenario for the Sabres. And in terms of the rest of the year, play the kids, let the chips fall where they may, and know that next season you're going to be even stronger, and you should expect to compete for a playoff spot in 2019-20.
Ryan Kennedy, the Hockey News. Quick soundbite here from Jason Bottrell on the Skinner conversation.
His group and I has obviously continued our dialogue. We haven't done play-by-play in the media just because that's the way we wanted to go about things. Both sides continue to work to try to find a resolution.
Both sides work to find a resolution. Skinner not under contract. You may remember my super secret Sabre source reporting that Skinner was looking for 8 years and $9 million per year. Way back when. This would have been like November, maybe. And Sal, I was mocked.
Now that seems to be possibly the case.
Yeah, that he wants nine, and the Sabres might not want to go to nine. We'll see. I had two things I was going to get to. First, let's do this. Time for the ideal trade. this morning's Ideal Trade, presented by the Ideal U Weight Loss Center, 631-THIN. For the Ideal U Weight Loss Center, Clarence, West Seneca, and Tonawanda, call 631-THIN. Following Chris Ostrander on Twitter at 2inthebox.com, he's recapping a Bob McKenzie podcast and what an asking price might be for a certain Anaheim defenseman that I'm a big fan of, Brandon Montour. And he said that the suggested asking price for Brandon Montour is a first-round pick and a serious prospect. Okay? First-round pick and a serious prospect. And I'm here to say, you can have it, Anaheim. I just don't know if the Sabres have a serious prospect. Brayton, who's the most serious prospect they have?
Well, I mean, if they're looking maybe to fill in the void for defensemen, probably Brendan Gooley would be that solution right now. I mean, maybe you'd throw Will Borgen into that mix right there. Borgen's been actually playing quite well as of late.
I'm prepared to throw a first-round pick and the two most serious prospects.
Okay.
If I could get Brandon Montour in return. Montour is a young, 24-year-old RFA defenseman, cost-controlled RFA in 2021. Like, let's go. It takes a first and a serious prospect. Would you take two prospects that you don't think are too serious? Like, my ideal trade, that trade. Montour and a serious prospect, or Montour for one of the Sabres' firsts and a serious prospect. I would tell them they can have the highest of the three picks that the Sabres have as long as they don't win the lottery. And that is, yes, the 14th pick, if that's what it ends up being. That's my ideal trade for Brandon Montour. There you go. Ideal trade. What else is going on? Anything? It's going to be windy. Hey, they're saying we might lose power for several days.
That's crazy. They've already, I know the power companies have already been kind of on alert, getting ready. This is weird.
Did you lose power during the October surprise?
I wasn't here yet.
Okay, you were down in Florida.
Yeah.
I lost power for 8 days.
Oh, that's horrible.
We had a generator on our porch.
Wow.
Yeah.
Where'd you live at the time?
Linwood Avenue.
Wow.
8 days.
I lost power after Hurricane Charlie down in Florida for about 4 or 5 days, but that was nothing compared to what I saw from some people near me. Like, they literally had their homes destroyed and, like, had nowhere to live, which was horrible. And we had an elementary school, right? Middle school, right kind of across the street. It was being used as a staging area for, or a housing area. Like, people who lost their homes were actually, like, living there. And we'd go over and help out, you know, as much as we could because,
yeah.
I mean, I just didn't have power and I felt really fortunate, you know, like, wow, these people lost everything. So we'd go and help, you know, with laundry or whatever if we could. It's just, it was horrible. So, you get in those situations and you just feel for anybody that, you know, loses any sort of property or whatever. You can always get your power restored and it sucks. It really does. But I've been through
watching homes get destroyed
and, you know, I'll take losing power over that for sure.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I can't imagine what it's like to be through one of those hurricanes. Oh. The closest thing I can ever remember being the worst weather, I guess, I've ever been a part of. There's the October surprise storm, but I was at Syracuse when there was the microburst.
Yes.
El Derecho or whatever it's called. There was a microburst, a crazy storm that blew out all of the windows. Not all, but a lot of the windows in a 20-story Laurentian Tower. Like, windows got blown out and there was a field there, like a little quad. That we used to play intramural football on, and it's a field for softball, baseball, everything. And the field was covered in glass and had to be basically shut down for more than a year imagine that much glass in a field that people are going to try to use, you know, like that's out of commission for a long time. So that's the worst I can remember being in any part of. That's not like a blizzard.
Tell me what your itinerary is for Syracuse basketball tomorrow. Like, what do you do? Is it a normal kind of routine when you go to games now again?
Well, the game is at 6 o'clock.
Right. It's a weird time, by the way.
It is a little bit of a weird time.
Usually you get 12 or 2 or 7 or 8.
I might want to say that the time is for the best. 6 o'clock is better than 8 o'clock. Last time I went back to Syracuse for an 8 o'clock game, it would have been Syracuse-Villanova. It was one of the other largest on-campus crowds in history. This time they're going to break the record by 8. I want a shirt that says I'm one of the 8.
Yes.
They should give out 8 shirts and
say. They should.
They really should. I was one of the 8.
Well, I don't know if you saw it against Louisville. They showed 4 seats on each side of the bench and they said those are the 8.
That's it?
Like they added those to. That's what they did.
Okay.
It's crazy.
Probably no Zion Williamson.
Probably not.
Probably no Jim Boeheim.
Maybe not.
But yeah, it'll be meeting some friends from college that some still live there. You know, we'll go to the Hill. We'll try to get food maybe downtown first, because trying to get into a bar on the Hill for a Syracuse game against Duke on the break the record night, like, good luck.
Yeah, right.
Just not going to happen.
Do you go to varsity?
I've been to varsity several times. We won't. I mean, I don't plan on going this time. There's Fagan's, which I hated Fagan's in college.
Yeah, I didn't go much. It's most of a senior bar, too. It's mostly like it was where the seniors hung out.
I hated it. I hated that we always had to go there, and I always thought, why are we going here? It's not even that fun, but we only went there because everybody went there.
Right. You can't go to Chuck's anymore.
No, Chuck's.
That's gone.
Chuck's came back and is gone again.
Yeah, well, because they tore that area down, right, to build like a...
I haven't been back in a year or two.
I don't know. I think it's gone. I'm not positive. I think it's gone.
I know a Chuck's that went away and then came back.
It did, but it came back and it was...
Above ground.
Above ground instead of down ground. So I don't know. Somebody could tell me I'm totally wrong on that. Okay. I don't know. For those of you who remember Syracuse back in the day, I worked at Maggie's.
Okay.
I worked at Maggie's on the Hill.
Maggie's used to sell beer by the yard.
Yeah, we had a bunch of different cool things. I was a DJ there. I was a bartender for a little while, but I was a DJ there. And then around the corner, had my friends at 44s, and
did
I'd
Maggie
hang out there.
Also have fish bowls?
Yes, we did.
Yeah.
We had fish bowls.
You drink fish bowls.
Yes.
Yeah. You ever use a fake ID in college?
I cannot confirm nor deny.
Okay, you don't have to answer that. I definitely used one at Maggie's. I can tell you
I can tell you many people did, because I was near the front door a lot.
Yeah. Maggie's, there was 44s, and there were that became Conrad's, and now it's a pita place.
There was a pizza place on the corner I loved, and there was a guy, a guitar player, who, being about town, you know, homeless guy or whatever, but he played his guitar, Eli. Awesome. So Eli was there in the 90s when I was there, and we loved Eli. And at night, he'd come into the bar, you know, we'd give him a drink, he'd play some tunes, it was really cool. So I go back to Syracuse last year for the Clemson game early March, like one of the last regular season game, basically. And Eli's playing the guitar, like, near the dome. And I'm like, oh, my God, like, dude, that was here 25 years ago. You're amazing. And it was awesome seeing him again.
Mm-hmm.
Loved it.
My last, that 1:08 game, the Syracuse-Villanova game, is something that one of the best days I've ever had, one of the most fun days we've ever had. All my college friends were back for that Syracuse-Villanova game for one of the break the records. It might have been 8 years ago. And the game's at 8 o'clock. Yeah. So it's 8 p.m. We're at a college bar. We're at Fagan's, sitting around and thinking, I think it's noon at the time. Now, what in the world are you going to do for 8 hours before a game? You're trying to be responsible. I got to make this game. So we get this idea, and maybe you've heard this story before. You've seen it when I posted it. We decide we're going to go back to our old house. The house we used to live in.
They've told me this.
We're going to knock on the door.
Just say we used to live here.
We're going to bring 3 cases of beer, 330 racks of beer. We're going to knock on the door, and we're going to say, hey, we want to hang out here and drink and party with you guys. So we come up with this idea at Fagan's at noon. And we go to the store. We get a bunch of beer, and we go back to the old house, 706 Euclid Avenue. We knock on the door. Person comes and answers the door. Hey, man, we used to live here a long time ago. We brought a lot of beer, and we were hoping we could come hang out and party with you guys. Long story short, they said, of course, and we played beer pong and flip cup for hours on end, and all of my old college friends came, and all of their friends came, and it was, you know, these two groups of friends, 9 years apart, meeting each Syracuse guys. It was great. And the coolest part of it might have been, the best part was, here's the life lesson. This is where you hit the very special moment music, you know, like the, we learned a lesson from this today. So the guy, he's actually been on the show. His name is Mike Gennaro. He was an Olympic rower.
Okay.
He rowed at Syracuse.
Yep.
He's been on the show before. So anyway, a few days afterwards, like, we all exchanged information, shook hands, had a great time. A few days later, he sent me a message and he said, real quick, just wanted to thank you guys for what you did. It was one of our favorite nights of college. And it really reminded us, or it showed us, that even though we're all about to graduate, we're all still going to be friends. We're all going to keep in touch.
Right,
that's
cool.
We're about to part.
Meaning him and his buddies.
Yeah. We're all about to split up and part ways and graduate college. And the fact that all of you came back for this 9 years later is like, kind of made us feel like we'll always be friends.
We'll be okay. It's going to be okay. I get it.
There's your warm and fuzzy.
There you go. Hey, tonight, Bulls basketball at home, Kent State, ESPN2 game, but... they're going to be playing Kent State tonight, and it's a big game in the MAC. Buffalo is 11-2 in conference. They're tied with Bowling Green in the Eastern Division. Kent State is 8-5, sitting right there in third place. This is a big game for the Bulls, who moved in the net rankings yesterday After Syracuse beat Louisville, and I think it's part of it, it's not all of it, obviously, that obviously you want, you know, every win Syracuse has that's big helps UB because UB beat Syracuse. UB moved from 21 to 18 in the net rankings. Net rankings are kind of replacing the RPI in the NCAA formula.
Right. That's right.
So if you go by net rankings and weigh them a lot, you're looking at a five type of seed, although there are other factors. I don't know if they'd be a five.
For UB?
For UB. But they are 18 in the latest net rankings as of yesterday. I haven't checked today yet if they're out. But tonight is a big game, and people should go there. They should support the UB Bulls. It's fun basketball. It's exciting basketball. Nate Oates just does an amazing job with that group. He really does. And they got players, man. They got players. Go watch them. C.J. Massenburg and Nick Perkins. I mean, they have the list goes on. They have a really, really good team.
The other thing they have is, I mean, they've got a heck of a coach, too. And one of the things about Nate Oates that I like is he knows about the net rankings. I'm sure every college coach does. But I'm sure there are some college coaches that would say, I can't figure that out. It'll all work itself out in the end. Not Nate Oates. He's focused in on points per possession and how important that is for your net rankings. So, I think that deserves a ton of respect.
You heard the story about how that mattered to him in a game that was out of hand, right?
Yeah, yeah.
At the end of the game, essentially, from the story, I don't remember the full story. Someone might know it better than me. What I heard basically was there was a game earlier this year where the game was kind of like they were up by 20 and it was late. And there was a turnover. And instead of like, it's a turnover, whatever, the game is out of hand, Coach Oates basically said, well, wait a minute, like, we need to make sure that this is called right because this affects our efficiency.
Mm-hmm.
And if we turn the ball over, that's less points per possession we're going to get, and that's what factors into this net ranking thing. And as a mid-major, that might matter. Now, out of the thousands and thousands of possessions they have for the year, who knows if that really mattered, but if you multiply that and have it happen a few times a game, sure. I mean, I think that that's amazing to even think about that.
803-0550. That's UB and Kent State tonight. We'll go to Denver for Randy. Randy, good morning. You're on WGR.
Good morning, guys. Thanks for taking the call.
Thanks for calling.
Hey, I just wanted to talk about, I just think maybe not heart, but grit is what this team has been missing. Like last night, that's the time, they had grit last night, but I don't think the players on this team could play that way every night. I think we got enough stars, and I just think that things, I'm not talking about fighting, but things get out of hand with Buffalo that other teams don't let, like something as simple as the Yandle on Skinner. Well, I know Skinner's a rat, but if Marshawn gets that done to him, there's a scrum and there's just some intimidation going on. And there's other things like when Dubois, after Reinhardt scores and Dubois comes up and gives him one in the neck, who comes up and gives him a face wash? Jeff Skinner. Well, I want everyone on the ice in there. And, you know, even they double-teamed Eichel on the half wall in Dallas, and then Jamie Benn lit him up. We should be right on that. I mean, other teams all do it. Taze, when Risto give a clean hit to somebody against Chicago, Taze is right on him. And other teams, like it or not, other teams, when you make a big hit now, even if it's clean, other teams take offense. Buffalo doesn't. And so even how about Point and Kucherov last night? These guys aren't fighters, but they're willing to fight Buffalo. We just need to get a little more grit, maybe one of these like Simmons or a Wilson, young guys on each second, third, and fourth line maybe, add a couple defensemen with this grit, and I think it becomes easier for the stars to go to the dirty areas, and we're harder to play against. But, Jeremy, is that Montour? Does this guy got that?
He's an offensive puck-moving defenseman. I mean, he's I just like his ability to move the puck up the ice and help them score and like to be a partner for Dahlin, a second pairing guy. No, I'm not interested in that. I understand what you're saying, like Simmons and, you know, some power forwards. I'm into that. You know, you're the second caller. Thanks, Randy. We got to get to a break before Extended Sports. You're not the first caller to bring this up today. And I understand what you're saying. You don't mean fighting a little bit more sandpaper, as they say sometimes. You don't mean like the guys that don't score kind of sandpaper, but other times. You know, in last night's game, Bogosian did jump right in, and Skinner's fighting point. And the Sabres, Ristolainen was all over Kucherov.
Yeah,
and
drilled him.
And I didn't see Tampa do anything out of the ordinary that any other team doesn't do. And Tampa's the best team in the entire league. So your point's not lost to me. I agree to a point. I'll go to a certain level. You know, you mentioned Wayne Simmons and Tom Wilson. Those guys have grit, and they score. Like, so if you get me a guy like that, I'm all about it. I'm good with that. I'm going to want to find ways to move the puck. Ristolainen's game last night, we've talked about that a lot this morning, that You love what Risto did to Kucherov and playing that physical style. But if you're going to be a player that does that and hurts my ability to score, I don't have room for you. If you do that and you help my team score, you're welcome all day long. So I think I understand what you're saying, and I think I would agree to a point. So thanks for the call, and happy, beautiful, probably beautiful day out there in Denver.
I got to ask you, Extendo Sports, what are we going to do about this McDavid guy?
What about
something
him?
About him. I got to tell you about him.
Okay.
Got to tell you about him. What are we going to do about him?
All right, a couple quick hockey notes. Sal says we got to watch out for McDavid.
Going to have a hearing today. Connor McDavid, he hit Nick Leddy last night with the shoulder slash elbow. If instigators are listening here, Andrew and Craig and Marty, maybe they can take a look at this for me and tell me what they think. Because here's the thing. On the second replay, I just tweeted it out. Sal Sports. You could definitely see the shoulder and elbow get up, Jeremy, at the head area. You can see he leaned into him. He got 2 minutes. Leddy never left the ice, and it is McDavid, so I'm wondering what he's going to get. He is having a hearing today, apparently. That's what's been reported. New bracketology is out from Joe Lenardi. I'm looking over it right now. Where's Buffalo? A 7 seed playing in Columbus against TCU opening weekend with a second-round matchup, possibly against Kentucky, if that were to hold. That's what Joe Lenardi has.
Okay.
And they'd be in the South region. He has Syracuse as an 8 in the Midwest, taking on Texas.
Quick thing, 39 years ago today, the U.S. hockey team pulled off the miracle on ice. Wow. A lot of great quotes, you know, great moments are born from great opportunity. I'd like to see a skit where they have Herb Brooks give an actual hockey speech, like, pucks to the net, boys. Pucks to the net. That's it for us. Monday, trade deadline day. Enjoy your weekend.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.